everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. I am very delighted to be speaking with a very special guest today. I feel special just being able to speak to this person. I have with me Dr. Michael Clapper. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, Karen. It is lovely to be with you on this beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. So we're actually pre-recording this interview, and it's a very blustery, snowy day here in Manhattan. And we're lucky to be warm.
We are.
And dry.
Indeed.
Okay, now, my listeners know I've been a vegan for over 30 years, and I've been on this mission to promote plants and reduce pain and suffering and be kind to animals and all of that stuff for a very long time. And one of the first people that I ever learned about when it came to health and plant-based diets was a man named Dr. Michael Clapper. There were videos. Does anybody remember what videos are? The kind that came on tape that we'd put in a VCR? Well, I had a bunch of them that you had done. It was so informative, and that information hasn't even changed. Right?
Really?
Just more people are learning about it.
Truth is the truth.
So tell me, who are you, Dr. Michael Clapper?
I ask myself that every morning when I look in the mirror, right? I'm a classically Western-trained physician. I've been a primary care doc for the last, 47 years. My, they go by quickly. And the first 10 years of my medical career was spent doing standard blood and guts, emergency room, operating room medicine. And I thought I was going to be working in urgent care clinics and general practice offices all my life, but a number of events happened that made me adopt a plant-based diet. My body just loved it. A 20-pound spare tire of fat melted off my waist in 12 weeks. My high blood pressure went down. My cholesterol went down. I felt great waking up in a nice, lean, light body. And I just started sharing that information with my patients, and I've been practicing a plant-based style of medicine ever since. And life's been very interesting, to say the least.
Yes, our journeys, our individual journeys. I'm sure many people remember this. I know I can't forget it. We have lots of documentaries that are coming out. They seem like every other week there's a new documentary, and that's great. That teach us about healthy diets and the cruelty that's going on and what's happening to the environment. But the first one that I ever saw was Diet for New America. And you talked about being an emergency care physician.
I was an anesthesiology resident.
That's right.
I was doing anesthesia. Mm-hmm.
And I remember the conversations about the blood and all the fat in the blood of a patient that had had a heart attack
they had clogged arteries. We were getting them ready for surgery to have a coronary artery bypass procedure done. And back then in Vancouver, people who came in the hospital could go out for a day pass with their families. And this man had been out with his family, and when he came back in, the nurse asked me to draw some blood on him. And the tube sat at the nurse's station for an hour, and then when I came back to pick it up, the red clot had gone to the bottom, and the liquid part of the blood, the serum, had floated to the top, and it was thick and greasy white. It looked like glue. I went back, and I said, "Did you eat while you were out?" He said, "Yes." I said, "What'd you have?" He said, "I had a cheeseburger and a milkshake." And I realized all the fat in the beef burger, the butter fat in the cheese, the egg yolk and the mayonnaise, the vegetable oil in the fries, the milk fat in the milkshake, all this fat had oozed out into his blood and turned his blood fatty. And, you know, the old saying, out of sight, out of mind. It might be out of sight, might be out of your mind, not out of your bloodstream. That was very clear. And we took him to the operating room in a couple of days, and the result of keeping your blood fatty all the time with bacon and eggs for breakfast and cheeseburgers for lunch and chicken for dinner and ice cream for dessert, you'd keep your blood fatty, you know, constantly like that, and your arteries clog up and people suffer heart attacks and strokes.
Yeah. My question is, how come nobody else figured this out?
Indeed.
Are you just exceptionally perceptive and smart? I think so. But what blows my mind is doctors day in and day out must see this.
They do. And that has been an increasingly unacceptable reality of modern medical practice that I am devoting the rest of my medical career to overturning. This is just stunning. My profession and medical science in general can identify a genetic mismatch on gene A21, on chromosome 14, that they can identify with accuracy. But the thought that a diet of cheeseburgers and pepperoni pizzas might be clogging up our patients' arteries, this somehow is too abstruse for our colleagues to comprehend. And it's funny, but it's not funny. And this is a real issue. It's appalling to think that modern medical science, who spends trillions, literally, in health care, at this point, it's almost a willful refusal to see the effect of our patients' diet on all these diseases that they're bringing to us to treat. I have left, after 47 years in clinical practice, I've left clinical practice to go to the medical schools and talk to the medical students and give them the lecture I wish somebody had given me 50 years ago, saying, listen, you're not going to be seeing smallpox and leprosy. It's obesity and clogged arteries and high blood pressure and diabetes and inflammatory diseases from what your patients are eating. And to practice medicine like what our patients are consuming has no effect on these diseases is bankrupt, is scientifically bankrupt, and it's not right to withhold vital information from people, because we now know these are reversible diseases with a proper diet and lifestyle. And that's when it gets back to your original question, why didn't nobody figure this out? Well, a lot of people are figuring it out, but medical students from the beginning of their education get imprinted with this idea that the major degenerative diseases, obesity, diabetes, clogged arteries, high blood pressure, these are diseases of unknown etiology. We don't know why they form, just getting older. And medicine, these are not curable, of course, but medicine that reduces medicine to disease management, you know. Well, I didn't go into medicine to manage chronic disease. I wanted to cure people, and these are all curable diseases. And that's the good news. That's the exciting news. And I guess I'm giving quite a rambly answer here.
But, it's not a rambly answer. It's right on.
The good news is a concept I had practiced all these decades, and no one ever said the two words to me, disease reversal. These are reversible diseases. And I now go to the med schools, and I tell the students, you want to reverse these diseases or don't you? You want to heal these people or don't you? Because high blood pressure goes away, diabetes goes away. All of us who practice a lifestyle brand of medicine, get these folks on a whole food plant-based diet, stop the smoking, get enough sleep, yada, 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 all the things to reduce stress. And it's what we see is stunning. It's remarkable. Give the body the fuel that it really was designed to run on. And the obesity starts to melt away. And the arteries open up. And the high blood pressure comes down. And the insulin receptors clear out. And the type 2 diabetes goes away. And the joints stop hurting. And the psoriatic skin starts to clear up. And the asthmatic lungs wheeze less. And the migraine headaches fade away. And they turn into normal, healthy people.
That's an interesting word.
They turn into healthy people. And that's the most exciting kind of medicine you can practice. I'm the happiest doc I know. My patients get healthier right in front of my eyes.
Well, it's really the key exciting. Word you said before was managing, and the doctors are learning to manage people because managing makes money. You want to have a customer keep coming back, which is very, very sad.
Cynical, but you know, that's the de facto part of it. I don't know any doctor who's I'm not going to get my patients well because then they won't come back and I won't make money. They're not thinking that. They've got these blinders on that there is no cure for these diseases. Mm-hmm. And the best you can do is put off their heart attack as long as you can, and you're being a good doc. Give them their statin prescriptions and keep that LDL low, and you're being a good doc. They, of course, still go on to get heart attacks, even on the statins. And to me, to you know, the reason why this patient's high cholesterol is a threat to him is because of the artery assault that he's doing meal after meal of the fried meats and the high fructose corn syrup and the Cokes and the milk protein and the vegetable oils and the additives. We're assaulting our artery walls. We're injuring our artery walls, and that's what makes this plaque happen. And to imply the patient, well, you have no control over this, it's just genetic, and take these statins so your liver can't produce your own cholesterol, without talking to them, my heavens, man, what are you eating? I ask every patient, and I tell the med students, before you order another $1,000 scan or another $500 battery of blood tests, stop. Ask the patient what they ate yesterday. They have them take you through the whole eating day. And if it's full of burgers and buffalo wings, that's all you need to know. That's where you start. That's why they're sitting in front of you, obese and clogged up and hypertensive and diabetic and inflamed. It's that really unhealthy fuel mixture that's driving these diseases. And nowadays, there's more and more plant-based dietitians and people who will help people make this transition. Because the docs fooled around, well, I don't know anything about nutrition, I don't have time, I only have 7 minutes per patient. Doctor, you don't have to do the counseling. Just recognize you are looking at someone with a dietary-induced disease. Refer them to the plant-based dietitian. Let her do the counseling. Let her take them shopping and see them back in a couple of weeks and see how they're doing. But start incorporating plant-based medicine into your practice procedures, and you will see these people get healthier.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news, like you mentioned, is there are more plant-based doctors. There's this lifestyle medicine now.
Indeed.
Which is very exciting, and they have their certifications, so more doctors can get involved with this. But one of the things I heard about medical schools, why they're not teaching this, is because it's not on the exams. And then to get the questions on the exams is just an incredible challenge.
That's a very perspicacious question. Yes, absolutely. That is a real obstacle. And I've heard this. So, Doc, get it on the exams, and then they'll start teaching it. So to that end...
I mean, that's like a catch-22.
It is, absolutely. So we have started a nonprofit initiative here called Moving Medicine Forward, which is to help us get... plant-based especially, but just applied nutrition taught in medical schools as part of the regular curriculum. Every medical student should know that what their patients are eating is the main determinant of their health or disease. We want this in. So how do you do it?
And, right. Now this is called Moving Medicine Forward.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. You can go to my website, drclapper.com, drclaper.com, and click on Moving Medicine Forward, and you'll see the work that we're doing and how you might be able to help. All that said, as far as getting this on the medical exams, you're absolutely right. And so with a colleague, Jody Cass from the Plant Beer Communities Organization, she and I were sitting around brainstorming, and we said, how about getting it on the exams? And so we are mounting a campaign to approach the American College of Medical Examiners, to the American Board of Medical Examiners, to get a couple of nutrition questions on the exam. It needs to happen. And now even just getting some nutrition questions would be good. That of course, we'd want to... it's got to be more than taking the skin off the chicken and drinking skim milk. It's got to be plant-based nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you don't know until you try. And
exactly.
we're going to attempt to do exactly that. And the times are ripe for this. You know, 10, 20 years ago, it had been a hopeless task. But it's in the air. It's in the zeitgeist. The studies are there. It's bubbling up in the media. The patients are talking about it. The young doctors are talking about it. The era of plant-based nutrition is dawning. And I'm just trying to act as a catalyst to mm-hmm. pull open the doors and get the gears turning and get this going to the point where 10 years from now, the response, oh, of course we teach plant-based nutrition in our medical school curriculum. And we're all doing that nowadays. You know, that's what we want to accomplish, and I think we can.
Did you think it would take this long, or is this faster than you expected?
Oh, my. Both. I've been in this, as you know, since the 1980s. And so it's been 35 years down in the engine room with my early colleague, John Robbins, and others. We were all working to birth this plant-based consciousness. And it's been years and years, and despite the dire, saddest part is the environmental warnings that were not heeded, and now we've got melting ice caps, and the health warnings that every 30 seconds someone grabs their chest and falls over with a heart attack. It's, you know, we waited till the last minute, but it's starting to happen. We've reached a tipping point that seems to be clear, and so there's nothing to do but start with where we are and salvage what we can and get these changes happening as quickly as we can. And thanks to the internet and media personalities like you with lovely podcasts like this, you can reach a lot of people very quickly and really start changing things that are happening in the real world. So I'm moderately hopeful.
Okay, so the plan for moving medicine forward is...
Want to do three things. I am going to the nation's medical schools. I've been to the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, been down to Wright State University in Dayton, been over to Rochester, Michigan at Beaumont Medical School, went to McGill, spoke to the young folks in Montreal. Next month down at seeing the Gators down at University of Florida in Gainesville, then going over to University of South Florida, Tampa. And I go to these schools, and I want to do a number of things. I give a lecture to as many medical students and faculty as I can. It's such a remarkable process. The administration, they're not so thrilled about about arranging a Dr. Clapper lecture. So we just do an end run around them. In every medical school class nowadays, it's 2019, and there's always 20, 30 students who've seen movies like Forks Over Knives. Mm-hmm. They've seen What the Hell. They've seen Cowspiracy. The light's on. They know the plant-based thing is where it's at. So they form a nutrition interest group, and they invite Dr. Clapper in. They arrange the lecture hall. They put up the notices. They send out the e-blast. They arrange for the samosas from the Indian restaurant. And I come out and do the presentation. And we've been getting about 100, 150 folks in each presentation. Many of them have been filmed. Nice. And we get medical students, nursing students, dietetic students, pharmacy students, surgical residents, medical residents. We get quite a broad assortment of people. And I get up to the microphone and I say, I'm going to give you the lecture I wish somebody had given me 50 years ago. 50 years. 1968. Yeah. I was a first-year medical student 50 years ago. And it would have changed my entire medical career. It would have changed every diagnosis I made.
It would have saved a lot of lives.
Oh, it would have saved a lot of lives. Instead of just fiddling with their insulin doses, I could have said, how'd you like to get rid of your diabetes? How'd you like to get rid of your high blood pressure? And I wish I had been schooled on how to do that, but we know that now. So one, I want to keep going to the medical schools and giving this presentation. Then we want to work with the nutrition interest groups to keep the interest alive at each school and to send them cases to discuss with nutrition-based therapies. I plan on Skyping in once a month to the various schools and discuss a clinical case, you know, just to keep it in front of their consciousness that whatever sitting in front of high blood pressure, diabetes, abdominal pain, ask what they've been eating. That's probably a major factor about why they're sitting in front of you. Bring the patient's diet and lifestyle to the fore in your diagnosis, in your treatment. We want to work at each school or encourage the medical students in the nutrition interest group to work with their local faculty members to get nutrition education, applied nutrition, incorporated into the standard medical curriculum. So I don't have to keep doing this. It should be as sure as you teach anatomy and physiology and pathology and microbiology, you should teach applied nutrition. In fact, in all 4 years, in the basic science years, the first couple of years, and then as you go through pediatrics and surgery and obstetrics and internal medicine, how has the patient's diet contributed to why they're sitting in front of me here? And so we want to bring nutrition to the fore. And it's time for this because it's the truth of it. That America is sick largely from what is been eating, and we can't pretend it's a virus in the water. It's the fast foods. So moving medicine forward is supporting me as I go around to the medical schools, as I encourage the formation of these nutrition interest groups, and as I work to get nutrition taught as part of standard medical education, so every young physician graduating has a good awareness of the importance of diet and how to use a plant-based diet to reverse these degenerative diseases.
Well, I imagine that if this was ultimately accepted in a medical school curriculum, it would really change things in the curriculum itself, because doctors are taught sick care. They're taught how to manage sickness. They're not taught how to cure. So things would really be shaken up quite a bit. It'll take some time to get that all sorted out, right?
It would. There's a couple of things behind your statement and your question there. You're absolutely right, although when you go through the surgical service, you shouldn't, not learn how to diagnose acute appendicitis and bowel obstructions. You know, you certainly learn your craft as a physician. But along parallel with it, we can't forget the importance of how whatever the patient eats within minutes is flowing through every cell in their body where their DNA lies unfolded. And our food molecules wash through our cells and they play our DNA like a piano. And they turn genes on and they turn genes off. And they turn enzymes on, they turn enzymes off. And every meal changes us on a genetic molecular level. The science is called nutrigenomics. It's how our food turns our genes on and off. And we can't pretend this isn't happening. And you bet it should change medicine. The old ways is clunky and huge and inefficient and is going to bankrupt the country, mm-hmm. the country as well as the medical system, and it's needless. All the suffering and just patch up acute care medicine really is ineffective, and people are dying needlessly from procedures they don't need. Now that said, what's behind your question is you absolutely have to have a change in the structure of not only how medicine is practiced, but how doctors and hospitals are compensated. Because there's going to be less disease, and there is value in heart attacks not happening, in CEOs of corporations who don't go down with a stroke. Doctors who can help that happen should be compensated. There are now being devised value-based compensation programs based on keeping the population you're responsible for healthy.
What a concept.
Indeed. I was told in ancient China that you pay the doctor while you're well, and as soon as you get sick, the money stops.
Yeah.
And it motivates the doctor to keep you healthy. Well, it's a bit of that same principle here. But it's time for this to happen. And in fact, I was at the last meeting of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and this lean, trim fellow comes up to me and introduced himself. I thought he was a physician. He says, "No, I'm an actuary. I'm head of the American Association of Plant-Based Actuaries, and we're realizing that the vegans, the plant-based folks, are better insurance risks, mm-hmm. and we should reward them, financially, or at least, and the insurance companies will make out with better bottom lines." And so we're doing a webinar with him next month to the plant-based actuaries. And talk about a sign of the times. It's very
exciting. There are life insurance companies too that are offering benefits or lower premiums.
As well they should. Mm-hmm. As well they should.
Excellent. You've been doing this a long time.
Indeed.
Have you learned anything new over the decades?
Oh, absolutely. For the past 8 years, I was on the medical staff at True North Health Center in Santa Rosa, California, about an hour north of San Francisco. And for 8 years, I practiced applied clinical nutrition. And people would come in with all the classic diseases, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, clogged arteries, lupus, inflammatory diseases. And we put them on a whole food plant-based diet, and we run that lovely phytonutrient-rich food stream through their tissues day after day after day. And what I was privileged to see there was stunning. Again, why didn't somebody tell me that this powerful medicine exists? And it's what I want to share with the med students. The transformations that I was privileged to witness within days, as their joints stop hurting and we can stop their medications, it's making them tired and nauseated. Those get to be removed pretty quickly. As the days go by, they start turning into these healthy people, and the bloat leaves their faces, and the wince leaves their eyes as they get up, and their knees don't hurt anymore, and their bowels start working, and the weight comes down, and after a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we didn't take before and after pictures, but I wish we did, because
that would be a great story. People love to see those.
The changes are just spectacular. And that's the most powerful medicine going. And every physician, and we would have physicians come through and do internships or rotations, and it would change their lives, change their practice. Once you see this, they say once you look behind the curtain, you can't pretend you don't know what's behind the curtain.
Right.
Well, this tears the curtain down. This is transformational medicine. You transform these people. They transform themselves.
And it's quick.
This is not a five-year project. Within days it happens, and certainly weeks to months. 90 days on a whole food plant-based diet, you are a different physiologic creature without question. And whatever pills you have in your medicine cabinet, the odds are you won't need them after 90 days on a whole food plant-based diet, not Oreos and granola bars, but real life.
Even vegan Oreos?
Even vegan Oreos, right. And that's been a thing over the years. You and I have both seen the rise of the vegan junk food industry, and bless them, you don't want to, it's nice for a treat, but you don't want to subsist on that stuff.
I remember I used to celebrate those treats because they were so few and far between. You couldn't find them, and then when I would find one, wow, I would have it.
Absolutely.
And now I won't eat refined sugar anymore. I'm done with it. It's over.
Right.
And because I don't want to say the thrill is gone.
Right.
But I know more now, and
sure.
I just don't want that in my body.
Exactly. We get wiser.
So that's what I was asking you. How have you become wiser over the decades, especially with respect to nutrition and what we should eat
and not
eat?
Fair enough. Absolutely. I get the question. Okay. So just to finish up my digression there, one thing I learned was the absolute stunning power of applied plant-based nutrition as a therapeutic modality. And on top of that, we also employed water-only fasting. I learned how to supervise a water fast, and that's another level of helping the body right itself and get back on the healing track. But that's for another podcast, probably. Me personally, just like you, I've learned the importance of whole foods. As trite as that is, I'm the kind of guy who would grab a vegan burrito out of refrigerator case at the health food store, and that would be most of my intake for the day. I've learned the importance of fresh whole foods to not go through your day without at least one big salad. We need fresh fruits and vegetables. You can't eat everything out of packages and boxes and cans, even if they're vegan. And so to have something fresh and live every day, green and yellow have become my favorite colors at dinner time. We have something dark green on the plate, kale, chard, broccoli, Brussels asparagus, bok choy, something dark and green, and something yellow, carrot, squash, sweet potatoes, yam, something yellow, green and yellow, yellow orange will take. Yellow orange, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes, yellow orange color. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely, yellow orange. Thank you. And all these wonderful new grains. I really wasn't familiar with quinoa. I sure am now. It's become my favorite grain. Farro, those of you who are not gluten intolerant, if you don't know about farro, what a toothsome, chewy grain. Oh, it's wonderful stuff. And how convenient. People say, this food is, it's inconvenient to make. Actually, you make these big, pots of hearty vegetable soup. My wife makes a spectacular hearty vegetable soup, and she loads it up with all sorts of vegetables and rice and beans and lentils and quinoa, and it's a meal in itself. And you can make up a big batch and put it into plastic freezer containers, let it cool, put a lid on them and freeze them, and now they're in your freezer, and when you don't feel like cooking them, bring them out, heat them up and eat them. So it's turned out to be, the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Now, I just want to interrupt and say, this is audio. You can't see what Dr. Michael Clapper looks like right now, but he's elated and smiling. Talk about all these foods that he loves to eat.
Indeed. Thank you. I can't hide it. No need to. This is nutritional good news. And it's so, I don't know where we want to go here, but the truth is, it's so right that this diet, I'm focused on people's inflammatory markers and intestinal motility and all that stuff, but really, really, one, we're talking about healthy human beings who aren't suffering anymore and wasting precious time on this planet where they could be loving and helping heal this world and bringing joy into their lives and other people's lives. And the truth is, you and I, Karen, are both longtime vegans in our hearts, and we all, you wake up like I do with the image of the slaughterhouse tucked away mm-hmm. in the back in the corner yeah. of your mind, and that's still going on every day, a million chickens an hour. And for all this lone physician can do, the best thing I can do to help the animals is get people to stop eating them. and a delightful, talk about a medical side effect, best side effect of all of people adopting widely adopting a whole food plant-based diet is one, they get healthy, the planet heals, and the animals get to live their lives without all this suffering. And so there's so many validations coming in from the universe on so many levels. Yes, this will lower your blood pressure, it'll lower your cholesterol, but it also makes for a sustainable...
It's a win-win-win-win-win. There's no... I mean, some people think that it's the food isn't good, and they just haven't tried it.
Exactly.
I mean, it might take a week or two to adjust to eating less salt or less oil and eating the refined foods. But to me, that stuff is horrible.
Really?
When I taste it. It's funny because I used to love eating white pasta, and then I went to whole wheat pasta and thought I was really doing a good thing. And now I don't even, like, barely ever eat a pasta.
Right, same here.
I would rather have, like, a farro or a rice or a quinoa or some whole grain millet. I love buckwheat and... yeah,
and
there we are.
Yeah, and if you like international cuisine, you could do it Indian style and Chinese and Mexican and Thai. And
we love food. We love eating, right?
Can you tell we're foodies here? And so those of you who are just thinking about what's this vegan thing, jump in, boots in, as they say in New Zealand, and you'll be rewarded with all this wonderful, delicious food you eat. And it's guilt-free.
I just have a couple more questions.
Okay.
So one I want to talk about is there's a lot of investment now in making plant-based meats.
Yes.
And there's different kinds of plant-based meats. And then there's these cell meats.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are.
Wow.
I know what my thoughts are. I'm wondering what your thoughts
are. Fair enough. Well, I'm a complete pragmatist. Anything that gets people not eating animals certainly has my interest up. And there's there's a couple of layers of inquiry here. So one, given a veggie burger versus a beef burger, I'll take the veggie burger every time, no question. And second, I think that especially new generation veggie burgers, the ones that bleed when you bite into them, if they can help Joe Meat and Potatoes guy transition away from his real live steer burger and start putting his toe into the plant-based pool there, I'm all for that. So I think they have a useful place. That said, no one's saying these foods are the bastion of health. They are texturized vegetable protein and a ton of coconut oil and starchy fillers. The food scientists were given free reign to come up with something
genetically
meaty and
modified
chewy.
Heme. Yeah.
So there's a trade-off there, and you don't want to eat this stuff every day, and you don't want to make this the center of your diet. I think I had a couple of new burgers a couple times. I don't think I'm going to eat them again.
Yeah.
But if as I said, if it helps Joe Sixpack get off his beef burgers, I'll give him a pass for at least for a few months to at least get on with it already.
I agree with you. The thing that frustrates me is that there's so much money that's gone into creating these products.
Right.
And why do we need them? Because people feel like they need to eat some kind of meat.
Yeah.
It's kind of insane, actually. And I think about that money. Mm. That money could be used to cure so many mysterious diseases. So many smart minds have gone into making burgers.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Instead of something really profound.
Yeah, we're a burger nation.
But we're a burger nation, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to ask is this new frontier of the microbiome.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Where do you see that going?
I see it going all sorts of wonderful places. In fact, the last lecture I gave, one of the young docs came up and gave me this article from the American Journal of Clinical of Surgery. Microbiome medicine, this changes everything. These are the surgeons writing this. And we are now understanding that the trillions of microbes that live in our gut are not innocent bystanders. Their byproducts are neurotransmitters and inflammatory mediators that change who we are. They get into our brain, change our emotions and our thoughts, change our inflammatory states throughout the body. They're a real key to health or disease, we now understand. And the real key thing, you know, the microbiome and the individual critters down there are interesting, but the real take home, the most important thing for the listeners, is that the food you eat determines the microbes that live in your gut. If you eat a bunch of sugar, you're going to summon up sugar-eating microbes. You eat a bunch of meat, you're going to summon up carnitine-eating microbes, and they don't do good things for you down your gut. But you eat a whole food, plant-based diet, you put soups and vegetable soups and salads and steamed veggies and quinoa down there, you summon up a wonderful microbiome full of Prevotella bacteria that are anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, and stabilizing. And the microbiome will take care of itself if you just give it the whole foods that really our species has been eating for millions of years. We really are plant-eating creatures. We are not homo carnivorous, and the microbes are just asking for those whole plant foods, and you wind up with some wonderful microbes that do good things for you.
What's fascinating is the human body is really very resilient, and it's amazing how much crap we can feed the human body, and the body continues to live. Maybe with some problems, but
keeps going.
And imagine if we just took care of ourselves.
Oh,
how long do you think we could live?
This body clearly is, we're given all the centenarians on in the blue zones here. We usually can make it past 100, and you throw a couple of decades on top of that. But again, it's not
it's
a matter
quality of life.
It's what are you going to do? No matter how many days you have on this planet, there's a number. There's a final number of them. What are you going to do with your time? And if there's an afterlife, I think we're going to be asked one question. You were given a human heart and time on this planet. What'd you do with them? Mm-hmm. How much did you love? I think that's really what it's all about. And use every day, every precious day on this planet as an opportunity to love and to make people around you feel better. And no matter how many days you have, they'll be well spent.
That's the best way to wrap this up. My listeners know I always talk about tuning in love on this show, and love heals, and it's all about love, and love cures everything. So love yourself and feed yourself some plants. Well, Dr. Michael Clapper, thank you for joining me and talking about moving medicine forward. Again, people can go to drclapper.com. That's spelled out drclapper.com. And you can find more about moving medicine forward on the website and a whole lot more because that website is loaded with information. Okay, thank you. The last time I had a chance to interview Dr. Michael Clapper, it was about 8.5 years ago on this program. It's always better to have a live interview with the person in front of you face to face. And it was especially wonderful to be in Dr. Michael Clapper's presence and get to know him a little better in person. the event that we went to afterwards at Candle Cafe West, I think I talked about it a bit last week, was really fantastic. In the past week, I've been to two book launch events. I want to talk about them a little bit. Of course, I went to Ocean Robbins' 31-Day Food Revolution event in Manhattan, and that was on Thursday. It was very fine. And here was another opportunity. I've spoken with Ocean many times. We have done programs together at the Food Revolution Network. I've interviewed him before, but here was an opportunity to be in the room with him, because most of the work we do is online where we're speaking through a screen. But to be with people in person, there's nothing like it. And he was really on fire. He gave a great presentation. I really appreciate the internet and the opportunity to reach so many people this way. And it's convenient because we don't have to share information at the same time. Podcasts can put information out and you can receive it when it's convenient for you. And that's a great thing. But there is nothing like being together in a room with a bunch of people and sharing information, discovering, learning. It's so powerful. It makes me think from time to time. I'm not ready yet, but I keep thinking my nonprofit Responsible Eating and Living, which is an online resource, that we should start having some live events. I used to organize live events back in the early 2000s when I was with another nonprofit called EarthSave, and I had these monthly dinner lectures. I would choose a restaurant in Manhattan that was not vegetarian. Occasionally I would, but there weren't that many actually. And I wanted a space that was big enough so that we could invite a speaker to give a presentation. I would talk to the manager, the owner of the restaurant that I was interested in going to, and we would work out a prefix all-vegan menu. And in hindsight, I think it was a really great idea because not only were we helping a restaurant out, we typically choose a slow night and bring in a mob of people. But the restaurant also learned about how to prepare healthy vegan food and see how many people enjoyed it. And it's fun to see today how many people that I would have come speak at these events have now become such major leaders and personalities in this food movement. So I keep thinking maybe I should start something up again. I wouldn't want to do exactly the same thing, but there is power in meeting people face to face. What do you think? Should we have some live events in New York? Would you like to go? What are you interested in? You know where to find me. I'm at info@realmeals.org. Always love to hear your input. The day before, I went to another book launch, and this was for Timothy A. Wise, his new book called Eating Tomorrow. I have not read the book. I'm very curious about it, and I just might have to pick it up. The event included the author, Timothy A. Wise, as well as Mark Bittman and Vandana Shiva. Have you heard of these people? They're huge and they're wonderful. I hadn't seen Mark Bittman speak before. I had read his articles when he wrote for the New York Times as a food writer. And I didn't realize how good a speaker he is and how funny he is. And then Vandana Shiva was amazing. Do you know her work? Have you heard her speak? I was like ready to nominate her as ruler of the planet. She was that amazing. The way she spoke and her intelligence and how articulate she was. Everything she said was just brilliant. The title Eating Tomorrow has a double meaning, we were told. The book is not only about feeding the population in the future, tomorrow and any day in the future, but also how today, in the current day, we are using up so many resources and doing so many things, negative things, to the planet, that we are eating today what we will need
tomorrow. So we're actually eating the future or destroying the future or compromising the future. It's a powerful title, simple but powerful. They talked a lot about Monsanto, the evil Monsanto, and now the merger with Bayer, or Bayer, however you like to say it, as well as the other cartels, as they called them, DuPont and Dow, that have come together. And they talked about how much power they have over our food supply. And of course, about the lies they tell. And the one that's really big to me is involving genetically modified food, genetically modified organisms. We've been told forever from these companies, Monsanto and others that are involved in GMOs, that they are being developed to feed the population and to feed the growing population. And Timothy had all kinds of data to share with us about how we produce more than enough food today for the current population, and we can grow enough food for future populations, what's anticipated for the next few decades. He said there's a glut of food. The problem with the billion plus people who are hungry on this planet is not about not having enough food for them. The problem is poverty. The problem is politics. The problem is privilege. They talked quite a bit about land grabbing. They talked about how governments have allowed corporations to come in and take land, and how the programs that they had when they would take this land, and oftentimes they would plow through the farms of people, small family farms, the real family farms, not the big giant quote family farms, but actually individual families and their small plots of land. He explained that very often these projects don't even come to fruition. They don't work out. But the damage has been done. He also gave some great statistics, and I don't remember them off the top of my head, but his point was that the industrial farms that use a tremendous amount of technology and genetically modified food actually produce maybe 30% of the world's population of food, and it's the small farms without all of this amazing technology grow the bulk of the world's food. So this promise from industrial agriculture that they're coming up with technology that's going to enable them to feed the world, they're not doing it. The yields aren't as good. The soil is damaged. They're using petrochemical fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides, all these toxic chemicals. I'm looking forward to digging deeper and picking up Eating Tomorrow, or maybe we'll be able to get the author on this program in the near future. I hope so. The elephant in the room was a cow, of course. Now, I don't know if the book covers animal agriculture, and I don't know if the book talks about how the majority of genetically modified foods, for example, are used to grow plants to feed animals, to feed people. And a lot of the problems that we have related to genetically modified foods would be solved if people either reduced or eliminated the animal products that they're eating. I don't know if he goes into that in the book, but he didn't go into it during the program, which was a little disappointing, especially for the second row of people in the auditorium, which included myself and a bunch of other vegans. Let's move on. So I want to remind you again, the documentary The Invisible Vegan is out, and I've seen 3 chapters now. There are 3 chapters available for free on YouTube. You can watch them one at a time, or you can purchase the film and watch it in its entirety. And if you just Google it on YouTube, The Invisible Vegan Chapter 1, it'll come up with all the information that you need. But I recommend watching it because it's a piece of Black history that I think everyone needs to know about. I'd like to wrap up the program today talking about delicious, yummy food. Who doesn't like talking about food? We love talking about food. It's all about food. The food I want to talk about today is spaghetti squash. I'm going through a spaghetti squash festival. It's a spaghetti squash festival. I cooked one spaghetti squash, and what I do is, it's really simple. I just put it on a baking sheet and cook it for an hour or more, whatever it takes to get it soft. And I cook it at about 400 degrees. I don't cut it open. I don't want to spend the time or the trouble to try and cut into a really hard squash. And then when it was done, I cut it open and then I put it in the refrigerator. And I wasn't ready to eat it for a couple of days. But then when I was, it was there for me. And I'm alone right now because my partner Gary is in California. And he's been gone for about 6 weeks. And I will see him very soon on my way to California. But back to spaghetti squash. I've been eating by myself, and so one spaghetti squash has provided me with many, many satisfying meals. There's a lot of spaghetti in there in one spaghetti squash. And what I did was I scooped out the spaghetti, and I prepared a simple sauce made from fresh tomatoes, red onion, some dried basil, and I sauteed all of that together. I always dry saute, I don't use oil. And then when it was all cooked, I added in the spaghetti squash, gave it a nice little spin. And then I turned the heat off once everything was cooked, and I added the secret ingredient. The secret ingredient being my almond ricotta. Have you ever made my almond ricotta? The recipe is at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Some people might think it's a little tedious to make, but I think it is oh so worth it. So let's step away from the spaghetti squash for a minute. I'll talk about the almond ricotta, which is just soaked raw almonds. And then when they've soaked for at least 8 hours, you can gently remove the skins. I find it to be a very relaxing, zen-like process. It doesn't take very long. Some people might think it's too much trouble, but the results are so worth it. Then I blend the almonds with a small amount of water and a little chickpea miso from South River. They're my favorite miso company. They make organic misos, and they don't have as much salt as other misos, and they're just fabulous. And this makes the almond ricotta. It's just three ingredients, almonds, water, and miso. And not even a lot of miso, just enough to give it a little tickle of tang. Tickle of tang. Well, I mixed a little almond ricotta in with the spaghetti squash, and this was an amazing dish. I couldn't believe it. And I had it again, the leftovers, and then I made it again with I only used up half of the squash, and then I had the other half, and I made it again, only this time I added a little porcini mushroom powder in with the onions and tomatoes. This is like pasta. I don't like to eat noodles with refined flour, even whole grain flour anymore. And spaghetti squash is just, it's perfect. It gives you that spaghetti feeling. And you can use your favorite sauces or try something like what I'm suggesting. This almond ricotta with the tomatoes and the basil and the onions is just fabulous. If you check out my What Vegans Eat blog, you can see how beautiful this dish is. Specifically, What Vegans Eat Day 1457 and 1460. Those should have some nice photos for you of spaghetti squash. Before signing off, I want to thank my very best brother, Barry Hartglass. He has helped a bit recently with the audio of some of my recordings when I've pre-recorded interviews, and sometimes they don't come out exactly the way I like them to. He came to the rescue with a couple of them, just to balance the volume, balance the sound. He's a musician and a sound engineer, and he's a good person to have in the family. So thank you, Barry. Barry's also a wonderful composer. He composed theme music for this show that I've been using for almost 10 years now. If you want to learn more about Barry and his music, you can go to his website, barryhartglass.com. It's good to express gratitude. It feels good, and I think it feels good to receive thanks from someone who's appreciated something you've done. I appreciate you. I appreciate you for listening. I appreciate you for wanting to know more about your food system. I appreciate you for wanting to learn new things. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in love with me today on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. You can write me at info@realmeals.org. Follow me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Have a delicious week. Thank you.